This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links.
Good morning out there. That's right, Asia Pacific Currents. And thanks to TalkBack, Solidarity Breakfast, for another interesting program. My name is Pierre Morrow.
I'm Clancy Moore.
And we're bringing you today's program of Asia Pacific Currents, Australia-Asia Worker Links program here at 3CR Radio. And our contact details is 9663 7277, or you can go to our website, www.aawl.org.au, and you'll find many more bits of information and follow-up to the news that we've got. On today's program, we've got a full agenda. We actually had way too many stories. It was an eventful week in the region, so really there's actually many more that we could have brought you, but unfortunately we won't. And then in the second half of the program, we have an interview with one of our regular correspondents, really from the region, Giles Ungapon, about what's happening in Thailand, given that it was International Human Rights Day, and what's been happening after about 6 months after the crackdown in Thailand. But Clancy, will go straight to the first news item.
Thanks, Pierre. And continuing with our theme and mention of Human Rights Day, which was yesterday, the United States mission in Timor-Leste has denied workers human rights by denying workers their right to form and join trade unions, in direct contradiction of Article 23.4 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The US mission in Timor-Leste has refused to meet with the workers and the union in Timor regarding the unfair dismissal of its member Mario Baretti on the basis of, and wait, this is quite shocking, as part of the terms of his employment, Mr. Baretti is not allowed to be a member of any organised union, and therefore we will not meet with any representative acting on his behalf. That's a direct quote from the US mission in Timor. The US mission is also denying Mario the right to form and to join trade unions for the protection of his interests as per Article 23.5 of the Human Rights Declaration. Furthermore, the US mission is also breaching the International Labour Organization Convention 87, Freedom of Association, and the Protection of the Right to Organise Convention, which Timor has ratified.
Well, as they say, Clancy, the land of the free, aren't they?
Yeah, and just on a final note, in defence of the US mission, they're claiming that they've refused to meet with the union because they've got diplomatic immunity.
I have to say, that's a new one.
It's a new excuse. We've had a few over the years, but that's the latest.
No union contact, diplomatic immunity. It just shows the depth that they will actually go, really. But I wish all the best to our East Timorese comrade. This is actually next door. This is a very, very late news that's come to us. It's an urgent action alert from Indonesia that Suthoni, the secretary of the Kasbi Indonesia Jakarta Region Union, which we've covered a few months ago, they were very involved in winning a strike at a subsidiary of Boral in Jakarta, was arrested and beaten while attending a peaceful International Human Rights Day rally in Jakarta yesterday. Kasbi is now asking all comrades worldwide to help free Suthoni, and is actually asking to send protest messages by text to both the Indonesian National Police, which is on 62815 966 3218, and also solidarity message text to Kasbi itself, which is 62131733 1801. So there you go. That's a very easy way and quick way to do international solidarity. Send a protest text to the Indonesian National Police, which is the 0011 62815 966 3218.
Thanks, Pierre. Our next story takes us to Cambodia with another example of garment workers striking there, with over 800 workers recently fired for taking part in strike action, unfortunately. 16 Cambodian factories producing clothing for big brands such as Adidas and Gap have dismissed nearly 800 employees for taking part in a nationwide strike last week. Unions were preparing to issue demands to the factories to reinstate the workers or start legal action against the company. The union said the factories that dismissed the workers produced clothing for major labels including Marks & Spencer, Tesco and Puma. Those sacked were among the estimated 200,000 garment workers from 95 factories who took part in the September strike to demand better working conditions and a wage increase from $93 from $56. Sorry.
That's right, Clancy, and we've covered those extensively, and I think there's actually, if you go on the AWL website, you'll be able to go back to previous news stories. There's actually news stories about it, and I think it's great what they're doing, and you know, Cambodian and Bangladeshi workers have been really, really at the forefront of these struggles in this year. We go to the Philippines, where just to give you a very quick update, we brought you a lot of information about the 43 health workers known as the Morong 43, who have been in jail for most of this year under suspicion of terrorism, where they're actually now on the eighth day of their hunger strike to ask for the immediate and unconditional release. Again, if you go to the AWL website, you'll be able to find more information about these 43 health workers.
Our next story takes us to Tehran, where the condition of a jailed bus workers union member is described as being extremely serious as he nears the end of his sixth day of his hunger strike in protest against his continued detention. In a letter to the World Trade Union, the Human Rights Organization, the worker's family have raised alarm about his health, calling for urgent international action to force Iranian authorities to release him immediately. The union member was arrested in June 2010 and continues to be detained despite the fact that his family have provided the onerous bail demand. Concerns for his health are particularly high as Shabibi, the Iranian union member in question, already suffers from multiple medical problems. Hopefully in the next couple of days we can give a link on our website which will actually allow members and, you know, activists to support this terrible case.
Yes, and unfortunately Iran has quite a few trade unionists in jail. The next item really is a bit of a sad one again, and it's from South Korea, where we've brought you information about the temporary workers at Hyundai Motors who had been on strike and actually had occupied parts of their factory. Unfortunately, they've ended the strike and they're in negotiation with management, but there's been no clear-cut concession by Hyundai. They're really the striking workers are looking for job securities, and while Hyundai obviously wants to keep them at lower pay and insecure employment, you know, to be able to cut costs, this is a huge issue in South Korea. And part of the pressure from the company was that they filed a huge damage suit against the striking unionist. So anyway, well done, comrades. We hope that you can keep fighting. But that's just one of many strikes that are happening in South Korea. And just as a final one, just to give a quick update, that the Gaza caravan that started in India a few days ago, I think last week, has now entered in Pakistan. There's around 30 people who are travelling in the Asian Gaza Solidarity Caravan are actually in Pakistan now, and they will go through to Iran, Turkey, Syria, Lebanon and Egypt, and they're hoping to get to Gaza on the 27th of December. So be interesting to follow this development and see how they go.
And just finally, one late news story which came to my mobile phone at about 3 o'clock this morning. My sister Louisa gave birth to a baby boy in Sydney by the name of Kobe Moore. So big shout out to my sister and new Kobe, and let's hope he's an activist like the rest of his family.
That's fantastic, and we hope that your sister is sleeping and resting peacefully now.
Let's hope so.
It's just on 9:09. We'll go to a quick break, and then we'll be back with the interview with Giles Unkapapa. Park Horn about the recent developments in Thailand.
3CR's website now hosts podcasts of some of 3CR's programs, so you never need miss some of your favourite shows. But you can make it even easier for yourself by subscribing to a 3CR podcast. Subscribing to a podcast means that each time a new podcast is made available, your computer will download it automatically, so you can listen to 3CR at any time that suits you without lifting a finger. To find out about subscribing to 3CR's great range of podcasts, go to www.3cr.org.au/podcast help. 3CR's podcast help page will tell you everything you need to know about getting independent community radio directly to you. Subscribe to a 3CR podcast today.
Before we go to the interview with Giles, just to let you know that just on Human Rights Day yesterday, the Asian Human Rights Commission in the yearly report has just looking at Thailand said that anti-human rights forces and their allies have re-emerged to take control of key national institutions in Thailand and are digging in to fight for political control of the country. The group went on to say that Thailand's resurgent internal security state exhibits an original authoritarian style with more refined public relations and a sharper concern for new types of political and technological threats to its authority than its predecessors. And the Asian Human Rights Commission identifies its features to include expanded use of emergency regulations to legitimate all state actions while also producing impunity, failure to meet obligations under international human rights law, the obfuscation of truth and curtailment of justice, and the failure of the country's human rights institutions to perform according to their mandate, which I think is quite a good overview of some of the issues that Giles talked to me earlier this week. And apologies for some of the sound quality, but I think you'll be able to understand all of the interview. Giles, last month on the 19th of November, there was actually a demonstration of around 10,000 red shirts in central Bangkok to commemorate the 6 month anniversary of the crackdowns and the brutal killings that happened on the 19th of May. What was the significance of the red shirts being able to demonstrate in such numbers again?
It's very significant because it means that the red shirt movement is still very much alive and that they have the courage and confidence to protest on the site where nearly 90 people were gunned down in cold blood by the army. In fact, it's the second protest. The first one took place on the 19th of September and then again on the 19th of November. And these have been coordinated with protests outside prisons up and down the country where red shirt political prisoners are being held. So it's very significant in that way. It's also very significant because the way that the protests are being organized now by Khun Somphat and his allies is a sort of form of grassroots self-leadership. He calls it the horizontal leadership because a lot of the top red shirt leaders are either in prison or they're abroad. So it shows that red shirts, you know, don't just follow orders from Thaksin or the politicians of Pheu and that they're quite capable of organizing themselves in quite disciplined protests. And this is a good thing because we need self-leadership among such a large social movement, and we shouldn't just rely on the politicians and certainly not on Thaksin Shinawatra to set the agenda and so on. What's also interesting is since the September protests on the site is that it's been quite obvious that a lot of red shirts have been voicing discontent in public with the king. And this is a new development since the bloodshed in May this year. And it really knocks away one of the pillars of legitimacy for the army and the dictatorship.
Before we get on to how the red shirts are reorganizing themselves, just to look back again to the massacre on the 19th of May and really those couple of weeks, has any of the military or any of the commanders been brought to justice for those killings?
No, this is the usual thing in Thailand, and that is that state officials, military, police, no one has ever been punished for any state crimes, whether it be in the 1970s, the 1990s, or this year, or the crimes in the south of Thailand as well. And in the case of this year, they've actually got a clause in the emergency decree, which is still in force in Bangkok, that absolves the state officials from being prosecuted. Of course, in the future, if we hope we can have a democratic government, then that kind of law will be put aside and we can actually bring these people to justice. I mean, at the moment, the Department of Special Investigation, which is supposedly carrying out post-mortem into the sort of inquiries into the deaths, and they have significantly failed to produce a report, obviously because the vast majority of those killed were killed by army sniper fire, and it was very difficult for them to prove that red shirts had anything to do with any of the deaths, and so they're sitting on the reports or refusing to conduct inquiries, and that includes the inquiries into the deaths of foreign journalists and other people as well.
That's right. And so is it the fact that the government in Thailand now, obviously headed by the Democratic Party, is still trying to legitimize its rule?
Yes, the army feel that it's best to have a sort of a democratic facade, face of democracy, and that's why they're happy to go along with and to actually install the Democrat Party as the government, and that is why the court case recently, which was going to consider dissolving the Democrat Party for breaking electoral law, the courts, which are by now famous for their double standards, decided that they couldn't consider the case because the process of bringing it to court was wrong. So that was very convenient for them. They didn't have to consider it, and the Democrat Party stays in office, while previous similar cases, the genuinely elected government, which represents the view of the majority of the people, have been dissolved by the courts twice.
Now, you mentioned the role of the army, and unfortunately, if you look at the history of Thailand, the army has had a lot of blood on their hands when they intervene in civilian politics. So according to you, the military is still very much in control at the moment?
Yes, I believe that the army is the major power force, is responsible for the destruction of democracy in Thailand, whether in the past or in the present day. There is now a huge debate going on among the red shirts about who really ordered the shooting. A lot of red shirts believe the king ordered the shooting. I personally believe that the army uses the weak and spineless monarch in order to provide legitimacy for all it does. And then it's in the same way, it's using the Democrat Party of Apisit Wechachiwa to front a military junta. These things are very hotly debated at the moment. There's a recent book that just come out from printing publishing in Copenhagen, which claims to be discussing the monarchy, but unfortunately says nothing very new and completely ignores the issue of the army. So they're sort of pushing the line that the king is all powerful in Thailand, which actually, ironically, is the line that the army wish to push as well, because then they can hide behind the monarchy.
Now, you did mention the fact that the red shirts at the start you said they are reorganizing. You've mentioned again the fact that there are debates about who actually ordered the killings. So from an outsider point of view, it's very hard to really get a grasp of how strong the Red Shirt movement, or shall we say movements, are still in Thailand.
It's unprecedented that after the deliberate killing of 90 civilians in Bangkok, that the Red Shirt movement still can organize protests in Bangkok and in major cities throughout the country, shows the resilience of the Red Shirt movement. And really, you know, although some people may well feel demoralized by the killings and the imprisonment, and many other people feel very, very angry about it. And from my point of view, the fact that they are becoming more and more self-organized, and that these activities are, they're also talking about the need to set up Red Shirt political schools in all communities and provinces in Thailand. That to me shows that the movement has taken a step forward.
In many countries around the region, one of the allies of such a movement would be the organized working class in trade unions. But unfortunately, in Thailand, the trade union movement is not only small, but very split. Are there any developments on that front?
Well, this is something that we have to patiently argue for. And myself and a number of other socialist comrades in Thailand are arguing constantly that the Red Shirt movement should strengthen itself by involving and expanding into the trade union movement, which would also make sure that there would be no room for the royalists to organize, because the royalists have some influence among the some sections of the state enterprise unions. This is something that can take place, but it takes a lot of patient argument. And I think that one of the things that helps our argument is to say that, well, you know, if we had general strikes or partial strikes, serious strikes in Bangkok at the time when the army was going to shoot demonstrators, then we may not have lost.
We would certainly agree that it would have certainly helped the demonstrators if that would have happened. So as a last question, Giles, we're coming to the end of 2010. It's now over, well, getting close to 7 months. How do you see 2011 for the Red Shirts?
Well, I think there are a number of questions and things that we need to look at. One is, to what extent will the politicians of Pheu Thai, and that includes Thaksin Shinawat, lead a movement to compromise with the junta? Because there's a lot of talk about reconciliation from the junta. What the junta mean by this is actually surrender. But the big question in many people's minds is, are there significant numbers of political leaders who actually want to compromise and therefore, you know, stab the movement in the back? And to what extent can the Red Shirts all carry on the struggle organizing independently of these politicians? The second thing is, there may possibly be an election, and we have to watch out to see how the junta fix it in various subtle ways. And the third thing is the continuing illness or ill health of the king. And if he dies, it doesn't mean that the power behind the military dies. It just means that the military will have difficulty carrying on with their legitimizing act. But nevertheless, these things will, if they come about, if he dies and so on, they will influence Thai politics.
Thanks a lot, Giles, for such a thorough evaluation of what's happening in Thailand. And we'll certainly keep in touch throughout next year to see how things develop. And of course, wish you all the best.
Thank you very much for inviting me on the program.
Australia's
Australians love their digital equipment, and that's all fine and good because it increases our quality of life, but we need to think more carefully about what we're doing when we're finished with it. E-waste is growing at 3 times the rate of other municipal waste.
3CR Community Radio is dedicated to exploring the issues that affect our future.
Because I think it is something we just need to be talking about.
855 AM. Tune in and listen up.
It's just on 24 past 9 o'clock. We've just got a few minutes left for Asia Pacific Currents, the weekly program of Australia Asia Worker Links. And that was Giles Nkopakorn talking about what's happening with the red shirt movements and Thailand in particular. And again, apology for some of the quality of the sound, but sometime with new technology that happens, but I think most of it was easily understandable. And Clancy, we've got at least one announcement.
Yeah, there's a very important event on Friday, the 17th of December at 5:30, put on by the Refugee Action Collective, entitled No Christmas on Christmas Island. So the Refugee Action Collective is calling people to come down to the Maya Christmas windows on Bourke Street Mall, and really highlight the fact that there are still thousands of people locked in detention within Australia, of which approximately 900 are children. And for these children and their families, there will be no Christmas for them on Christmas Island.
That's right. And we were just talking there in the break, Clancy, about just the political landscape in Australia, really. And sometime it's, what can you say about the refugee issue in Australia? Like, it's been going, certainly, you know, front page stuff since, you know, 2001, if not before that. And somehow the issues, the story, the lies and the scapegoating just seems to continue.
That's right. And, you know, it always shocks me that Australia, being such a wealthy country and supposedly a country of, you know, respect and rights and fairness, can treat people like this. It's a shame on our national identity, I think.
And look, and what do we say? The soupy fog of capitalism that
set in, especially at this time of year, unfortunately.
That's right, that's right. And look, again, just to re-announce that urgent action alert from Indonesia, where the secretary of the Kasbi Union in Jakarta, Suthoni, was arrested and beaten up while attending an international human rights rally in Jakarta yesterday. You can send your protest message by text to the Indonesian National Police, which is 0011 62 815 966 3218. And just write Free Suthoni, defend our unions. So that I think that's a great example of what we can do for international solidarity. And just to again remind people that today is the 11th of December. Next week is going to be our last show, Clancy, before we get our summer programming. So I think we'll both be there, and so will Giselle. So we'll have a special show on that. And and let's not forget our award, Clancy.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, APC brought you the first inaugural Red Star Award for our overwhelming and sort of outrageously amazing solidarity from workers across the world. This week, unfortunately, there were a lot of stories, but none of the stories were of such a high quality of activism. So we're calling on listeners to send in any possible examples of, you know, activism and solidarity they think would be worthy of the Red Star Award, and they can do that by emailing aawl@aawl.org.au or office@aawl.org.au.
That's right, yes. So we're always keen to award our Red Star to comrades. That's really, it's 28 past 9 o'clock. That's really the end of the program for another week. Just remember, if you want to follow up more and any more of these news stories, give us a ring on 9663 7277, or go to our website, www.aawl.org.au. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the Connolly Association program here on 3CR Radio. That's all from me, Pierre.
Clancy Moore, have a great week.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.